So it goes. Welcome to the No Sour Ha Ha Fun Time Power Hour. So it goes.
You need some whoop 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 boing, you know?
Absolutely. Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
What do you appreciate about teachers? Do you have a story about your favorite teacher? 844-967-2789. And we ask because it's Teacher Appreciation Week, starting today, going through the end of the week. But we would love to hear stories from you, about a teacher that made an impact. It can be on you. It can be on your kid or your grandkid, because in this day and age, teachers can't get no respect.
Seriously.
And so it feels like a week very well earned. They probably deserve more than a week.
I would agree with that. 844-967-2789. Who was your favorite teacher? What did they do for you? What did they teach you? What door did they open for you? 844-96-PARTY. You can call and or text.
Do you have one, Jane?
I do. She was 7th grade. Miss Zarin was one of our English teachers. And pretty serious. She was a pretty serious woman.
Okay.
But she thought that I had talent. She thought that I had writing talent because of some of the assignments that I turned in. And she gave me confidence that that I was good at something and that I should do more of it.
Yeah.
And I did. And so I owe her a huge debt of gratitude.
And I feel like that's so often the story that you hear is just like, and not that, like, I think about it and I was lucky enough that I definitely had parents who believed in me and told me that they believed in me and stuff. But I think a lot of times, like, it sometimes takes an outside voice, an outside adult to be like, no, you can do this. And so, like, those are the stories. It's not necessarily like the math lesson that you got that you're like, oh, she really helped me figure out that trigonometry. Like, without her, man, how would I ever figure out what A equals? It's the, like, the confidence and actually having someone besides your parents or besides a loved one. But sometimes a lot of people don't get that from their parents. And so hearing it from an adult figure and saying, no, you can do this, makes a huge difference.
And I
think recognizing your talent.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you said, I'm sure there are wonderfully supportive parents who encourage their kids. And I don't mean to devalue it, but it's almost like, well, you have to say that because you love me, you know? And so hearing it from someone outside, I think carries some weight. It does.
Yeah,
it does. And it sticks with you.
My vice principal at Cherokee Middle School in Madison was Jessica Doyle, who was Governor Doyle's wife.
Oh, wow.
But this was, I was in middle school before Governor Doyle was the governor. But she really believed in me. Like, she really encouraged me to, I think my 7th grade, I was vice president of student council.
Wow.
And then 8th grade, I ran and won president of student council. And I feel like that came a lot from her encouraging me and kind of seeing my leadership skills and stuff and encouraged me to run. And she was actually one of the first people when I first got back to Wisconsin that I reached out to that I was like, so I'm trying to start this thing. Like, who should I talk to? And so she still follows on Facebook and stuff, which is fun to know. But who was your favorite teacher? And what is your favorite story about your teacher? Or what do you appreciate about teachers? 844-967-2789. Because it is Teacher Appreciation Week. You know, with the end of the school year approaching, teachers are being recognized for their contribution to your kids. And, you know, a lot of this ends up being retailers and restaurants across the U.S. have a bunch of deals. I think in the next segment, we'll talk through some of those. We'll also have some ideas of like what teachers actually want if you would like to get them a gift.
And things that they've had probably more than enough of.
Yes.
Yes.
Like apples.
Yes.
No. Do you know where that came from? Bringing a teacher an apple?
It seems very 1950s to me.
But like, why an apple? What was it? Was it because they were just easy? Was it a propaganda like machine to like sell more apples? As far as it was like the 1950s version of Got Milk? I'm so confused as far as why apples are the things so associated with teachers.
Okay.
According
to Gourmet, in the 1700s, poor families in Denmark and Sweden gave teachers baskets of apples as payment for their child's education.
There you go. That feels like a lot of apples, depending on how many students are in the class.
Yeah, truly.
But I guess apples are a little bit better than an avocado. They don't go bad as quickly when you're like, you can hold on to them a little bit longer.
I'm just looking a little more on I'll
give some history on Teacher Appreciation Week. So I guess it started with former First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt. She began the effort to create Teacher Appreciation Week and National Teachers Day when she urged Congress in 1953 of the need for a day recognizing teachers. And this is according to School Specialty. But National Teacher Day was initially celebrated on March 7th, but in 1984 was moved to May. At that time, the National Parent Teacher Association began calling the first week of May as Teacher Appreciation Week. And so obviously we're not in the first week of May, but we are here now. And so, so I thought it'd be fun to hear some stories, and we can keep talking about it for the rest of the week as far as,
favorite
stories that popped out.
Right. What'd you learn? 844-967-2789. 844-96-PARTY, the apple of knowledge from the 414. In the Apple Delights Cookbook, author Karen Hood writes that in the 16th to 18th centuries, as I stated before, parents throughout Denmark and Sweden gave teachers baskets of apples. Teachers in the U.S. faced similar situations on the American frontier. Families were often responsible for housing and providing for teachers if they wanted their kids to go to school. Because apples were an abundant crop, students would bring teachers apples as a form of sustenance and a token of appreciation.
So this is like steeped in history.
It seems that way. In the 1920s, apple polishing was used as a common slang term for trying to suck up to a favorite teacher. Apples continued showing up as symbols for teachers and education over the years. Bing Crosby might have played a role in solidifying the connection after he sang a song in 1939 called "An Apple for the Teacher."
Well, there you go. Well, if you want some ideas on things that you can get a teacher besides apples, Up North News put together a article basically saying gifts that teachers actually want. But of course, now I was going to pick some things off of there and we're going to kill time because there we go. 14 gifts teachers say they love getting during Teacher Appreciation Week. Obviously, I feel like you can always start with things that are free. I think a note goes a long way. I think lots of times just, at least for me, a note goes a long way for me when people just like mention how, even if it's free, just like what you do and how much they appreciate it. Like words of affirmation, definitely my love language.
844-967-2789, 844-96-PARTY, taking your calls with your favorite teacher stories and who was influential in your life. It is Teacher Appreciation Week. Ben from West Bend, thank you for joining us, Ben. What do you want to say?
I had so many teachers that influenced me. When I was a kid, I was going to a parochial school, and I got to get moved out of there because I had a learning disability. And it was hard for me to change, I think it was like mid-semester. I think my favorite teacher, oh God, long list. I think it was Mr. Pauly. He was my kindergarten teacher. He was funny. He was just a riot. He became principal eventually. But yeah, a lot of my teachers, you know, were, you know, my safety net, because I was, you know, scared and, you know, all, you know, about being, you know, the kid, you know, with the special need kid. So yeah, I mean, teachers really helped me out through, you know, all through school.
That's awesome, Ben. That really is. You should tell them if any of them are still around, I bet they would love to hear that from you.
I'm trying to get a hold of one of them. My English teacher, she's still around and is from sixth grade. I'm trying to run into her, but a friend of mine I work with that we've been friends with like 20 years, he runs into her every so often and I'm never there. So one of these days, I want to run into her.
That's great, Ben. Thank you so much for calling. 844-967-2789, 844-96-PARTY, if you want to check in and talk about your favorite teacher.
Yeah, and so I'm trying to think that I said my at least two from Cherokee, and I'm trying to figure out who else stands out. Like, I always liked my music teachers because I think they always appreciated my enthusiasm, because what I lacked in actual musical talent, I really made up with like,
you tried,
showmanship.
You really tried, kid.
Just always willing to audition for the solo. And every once in a while, I think they gave it to me just because they felt bad.
She's here again. Just give her a bone. Let's just throw her a
truly,
bone.
Truly, I feel like that is the consistency. If I think of all the different music teachers I had from elementary school, middle school, and it was always choir. I think I played saxophone for like fifth grade and that was it, but it was always choir. And my choir teachers, I think, always really liked me, but also were like, oh, bless her heart, trying to be a good singer.
Oh, that poor non-talented singing, Kristen Bry.
She has other talents.
As we're coming to the end of the break, I also want to shout out to Mr. Scoggin, Mr. Egbert, Mr. Grandin, who amazingly taught geometry. And while I never learned how to prove a theorem, I learned how to play with the protractor and compass, and that gave me a lot of joy.
There you go. Should we get you a fidget spinner? It feels like a similar analogous
sure.
thing that you could play with.
That'll work too.
All right. Well, when we come back, I found a list of tweets of why teachers left teaching that may give some insight on why it's important for us to appreciate them and also to pay them. So stay tuned. This is As Goes Wisconsin. The world needs you now. Know that you matter, matter, matter,
yeah. You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Two, one, two, three.
If you ever find yourself stuck in the middle of the sea, I'll sail the world to find you. If you ever find yourself lost in the...
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair, and we were talking about Teacher Appreciation Week and what you appreciate about teachers. In the next segment, Ryan Martin, a.k.a. the Anger Professor, who is a professor at UW Green Bay, has a new book that's dropping tomorrow.
Exciting.
How to deal with angry people. And I'm sure some teachers wouldn't mind reading that book, because sometimes parents can be angry. And so stay tuned for that. I can't wait to talk to him about his new book. But as we're talking about teachers, I found this surprisingly on Upworthy, but they collected tweets and kind of confessions of ex-teachers and why they left teaching. And it's a little of an inverse, I think, as far as the touchy-feely stuff is like, oh, we love teachers. But I think it's also good to recognize like why so many teachers are leaving.
Yes.
And that potentially they need more than appreciation. They also need action. They also need to be paid. They also need better working conditions. So I thought, you know, we just read some of them because I think they're a little eye-opening. And this first one, if you think about it this way, I quit my teaching job and now make more bartending for 15 less hours a week.
Wow.
Also, I get blamed for way less and get told thank you way, way more. No lesson plans or grading papers. Remember this when people ask about the teacher shortage. Bartending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that something that dealing with a bunch of drunks is probably easier than dealing with a bunch of parents?
God, what does that say?
Right.
Here's one. Former teacher and medically retired principal here with an ED or EdD. So I'm guessing it's a PhD in education. The amount of work, harassment, and mandatory emotional toll in education with low pay, crap benefits. My doctor said I should quit or else I'd die.
Oh, my.
So there's that.
Well, and think about it, though, because, again, we've talked about teachers are expected to be much more than just educators. They're supposed to be social workers, and they're supposed to be cognizant of how the kids are feeling and what they're going through. And I'm sure for some teachers who know what the home life is for some of these students, that's got to be really hard to shake off at the end of a school day.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
To stop worrying about them or thinking about them when you know they're going back to situations that are not ideal.
But so much of this comes back. It's like, you know, I also think the conversation around how expensive it is to become a teacher and then what we pay them, and it's not worth it. Like, it doesn't make sense as far as like financially getting your bachelor's and only to make 27, 30, 35 grand a year. Because here's another one. I quit my teaching job in December and started nannying. I make twice as much per hour and work 2/3 of the hours.
Wow.
So you can still work with kids.
True.
quit teaching English, got a job in recruiting, making 20K more per year, was making master's degree salary as a teacher. Now I can work from home and I bank a lot of time due to a flexible schedule. Also was paid for my 4 months of maternity leave. And so no more admin to judge my so that's, I mean, a lot of these are kind of the interesting. I quit my high school theater teaching job and we'll be making less money, but the change in work-life balance more than makes up for it. No more 80-hour weeks or holier-than-thou types telling me I should be glad to sacrifice myself for future generations.
What other job are people told that? Be happy to sacrifice yourself for the good of others.
You get summers off.
Right.
Be grateful.
Yeah, right.
I just made the transition after 9 years of teaching. I actually got slightly better pay and health insurance as a teacher of 9 years than as a beginning software engineer, but my stress is so much lower. It has been a really good transition for me. I was a substitute teacher in 1998 and was aghast when I discovered my teenage son made more money in tips delivering pizza for 5 hours than I did as a sub in his high school on the same day.
And isn't that just a perfect example of what we value?
Totally.
What we value in this country, we sure don't value our educators. And I don't think that the vast majority of them are going in it for the money anyway. It was never been.
Oh no!
I mean, become a teacher.
I don't think anyone gets
become
into teaching
a teacher,
for the money.
Sail the world. You know, that's not what it is. I think a lot of these people genuinely love educating and love kids and want to help them. And so, but you can't. We can't keep asking them to buy their own school supplies.
Well, and it's that, and it's like it's such a bigger because I feel like when you read these in succession, it's as much about if not. Some of it's like, yes, I can make more money doing other things. But so much of it just sounds like the stress and just how tired they are. But here's another one. A quarter of the teachers in my school left after this draining year. And many of us who are left are strategizing our way out. I love my students and want to do everything possible for them, but I'm just so tired. Teaching takes years off lives. And like, I can't imagine it was always like this, right? And so it's like, what needs to structurally change? Because there's one thing I feel like the conversation we're having as far as recruiting more teachers, changing the completion rates of the educational programs. Our new friend Quentin, who is at IRG, he sent me something this week as far as like a pilot program for, you know, on that same subject, like where it doesn't make sense to go to college and pay for college to then make a teacher's salary. So are there other like apprenticeship programs and stuff like that? But so much of when you read this stuff, it's as much about getting people in the door to become teachers as keeping people as teachers.
Yes.
And not having the turnover rate of people burning out and being like, it's not worth it anymore. And doing it after 1 year, 5 years, 9 years. And so it's like there's something structurally of how we're treating teachers and how what their workload is that needs to shift so that we can actually keep people in that profession.
One big shift, at least from my perspective, I was always guilty. If I came home and I told my parents that I got in trouble at school, I was guilty. That was it.
Not like your conscience was guilty. No, like you were in trouble.
You did it. I know you did it. And I'm not going to go over to the school and tell the teacher you didn't do it because I know you did it.
Teacher is always right. All right. Well, we got to take another break. When we come back, Ryan Martin will be here, a.k.a. the Anger Professor. So if you have any questions about how to deal with angry people, 844-967-2789. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. And we are welcoming back Ryan Martin, a.k.a. the Anger Professor, back to the show because he has a new book coming out. And his first book was Why We Get Mad, How to Use Anger for Positive Change. And his newest book comes out tomorrow and is called How to Deal with Angry People, 10 Strategies for Facing Anger at Home, at Work, and in the Street. Welcome back to the show, Ryan.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
It's funny that we say in the street because literally I think on Saturday I was at a red light turning left. I was driving. My husband was next to me and it turned green and immediately someone honked at me to let me know that it turned green. And then he decided to escalate the situation and reach over and honk back at that person and started complaining about how angry everyone is all the time. I was like, what do you think you just did? Like, you could have just let it go, man. So certainly in the street. So I guess, how does this book differ from the first one?
Yeah, I appreciate that question. And so, especially because it ties into a lot of feedback I've heard from people recently that we can talk about. But you know, the first book was really focused on kind of misunderstandings regarding anger. People not necessarily always knowing what it was, not recognizing some of the positive ways that anger plays itself out in our life. And so it was really a little bit of myth debunking along with helping people see, kind of understand some of the broader consequences of problematic anger, and then also strategize on how to deal with it. This one is really based on, it's based on some feedback I've gotten from people on TikTok over the last few years, and you know, people feeling sort of unsure how to deal with angry people in their life. And as you just noted, even when we don't have like a specific angry person, which a lot of the book is focused on, hey, if you've got a specific angry person you deal with, even if that's not the situation, what about those sort of one-off interactions that we might have on the street or because we work in a service industry or something like that, we're dealing with angry people a lot. As a fun side note, I was sending the book to a handful of people, and I was at the post office a few times. And both times I was at the post office over the weekend, someone there, different people said, oh, we could really use this here. So I feel like there's a market there just in post office employees as far as people dealing with angry people.
I imagine anyone who works in service industry, anything that you have to deal with people, I would imagine that this book is very useful.
Yeah. Well, that was really, you know, the backstory here is that approximately 8 years ago, I wrote a blog post for Psychology Today at the request of a friend who said I could use help with this and reached out to me. And so I posted to Psychology Today, didn't think much of it. People seemed to like it, find it was helpful. I sort of repurposed it on TikTok about 2 years ago, thinking, well, I'll just share these out individually and see what happens. And it got a lot of attention from people who what became clear from that series and then things I posted since then is there are a lot of people, as you described it, who feel like they need help and feel like they need support and don't really feel good about their interactions with angry people or don't always feel like they know how to handle them. And so I'm thinking of this book as sort of a service to people out there who have been struggling with that.
And Ryan, I assume it's safe to say that the best reaction to dealing with an angry person is not throwing your book about angry people at them.
Yes.
Okay.
I agree. You know, it's only in paperback, so it wouldn't be heavy enough to do any damage. It is, you know, I think one of the first things I actually talk about, so the book is broken into two parts. There's the sort of understanding angry people and recognizing that not all anger comes from a bad place, that some of it actually might come from a good place. But that doesn't justify cruel treatment or anything like that. But they're not all angry people are necessarily monsters, quote unquote. So the first piece is about understanding angry people, kind of where that anger might come from. And then the second part are these 10 specific strategies. And one of the first things, to your point, Jen, is understanding your goals. You know, think about what do I want from this interaction? Sometimes what we want is what we're really sort of our instinct might be for revenge. But that isn't the thing that's actually going to get us a positive outcome. And so it's about figuring out what's best for me, best for the people I care about versus what I sort of feel like doing in this particular moment.
So I guess, because I think, how to think about this, and I feel like there's probably more categories in this, but the way I'm thinking about it is the three categories of like, there's strangers mm-hmm. who you have a brief interaction with where it can maybe ruin your day. But you're not seeing these people all the time. And so there's feels like there's probably certain strategies and tactics for that. Then there is family or mm-hmm. your partner that if they're with someone, I mean, at least a partner, potentially, I'm assuming if it escalates to enough, you would consider maybe not being with that partner. But your family is your family to a certain extent. And then there's also like coworkers that like, yeah. unless you're the boss, you either a coworker or your boss is angry. And so I would imagine depending on like how much control you have over how much access these people have to your life, the strategies are different.
Yeah, they absolutely are. And actually I will tell you right now that there's a specific chapter about knowing when to disengage, you know, like yeah. when do you actually say, hey, this is not a relationship that I want to continue with. And it was by far and I start the chapter out by saying this, it was by far the hardest to write.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is exactly, I think, what you're describing is our relationships with people. I mean, the one-off care per interaction, those are relatively simple, right? But whether it's family or friends or employees, a lot of times our lives are tangled together in ways that make cutting off contact very, very difficult, maybe mm-hmm. even impossible, you know? And so, I mean, what if this person is the mother or father of your child, you know, and like just going full contact free might be either impossible or very, very difficult. And so that becomes really, really challenging. That said, a couple things. One is I'm very, very careful throughout the book to try and differentiate dealing with an angry person from being abused, either emotionally or yeah. physically. Like that's a different thing and there are different strategies there. So that's one real important piece. The other piece is it doesn't have to be all or nothing. Now, there are ways that we can disengage without fully sort of cutting off all contact together. There are ways that we can change our interactions. There are ways that we can minimize contact or only have contact in certain ways, and so on.
We're talking to professor of psychology and anger researcher at University of Green Bay, Ryan Martin, a.k.a. the anger professor. And the professor is in. If you have any questions for him as far as how to deal with angry people in your life, 844-967-2789. We will take your calls and your texts. That's 844-96-PARTY. And I guess I say this from some personal experience currently, since I am pregnant and I am, I'm a little moodier than I usually am these days. And I would say, like, the difference between someone who is angry and someone who is irritable, and is that is like someone who's having just like is grumpy versus is angry. And is that negligible, or is there an actual functional difference with like dealing with people who are angry, and how would you qualify them?
Yeah, that's a great question. So usually we tend to think of, anger existing on this really broad spectrum with on one end, frustration and irritability, and then on the other end, rage and things like that. Those things are, I guess I would argue that I can see how irritability is really different from a person who is angry or really frustrated with me in particular or something like that, especially when you can identify a very specific circumstance that might be driving that, right? And so physical discomfort or even, sometimes our anger is driven by far more than just the provocation that's happening to us. It's driven by, hormonal changes. It's driven by that physical discomfort I meant, being too hot or too cold, being hungry, being sleepy. All these things can play a little role in that anger, or a big role in that anger.
And I think it's important too, Ryan, that the goal in these interactions is not to win, right?
Yep.
It's not to win the argument with the angry person. It's about how to work out some strategies to deal with the angry person.
Right. Yep. And that is really, I think there are times where it might be to win, but I think the problem is that so often our go-to, it's we think, oh, I want to win this argument, or I want to win this circumstance in some way. Instead of focusing on, some different set of goals, which, in the case of driving might be, my only goal is to get to my destination safely, right? I mean, that's it. Like, I don't need to win the interstate. I just want to get to work. So that's a very different set of circumstances.
Unless you're playing Mario Kart, then if you're in Mario Kart, then there's a different set of rules.
Exactly. Yeah. I think one of the chapters I have is about dealing with anger online. There are times where I might get in an altercation online or disagree with someone online. I admit in those circumstances, I'm not trying to win that argument because, I don't think I've ever convinced someone of anything online when I'm arguing with them. It's more about like the people watching. What are they seeing? What are they taking?
Yeah.
And so I'm sort of thinking about that as an outcome, is I want to convince some people, but just not the person I'm arguing with.
That's so interesting because for people who are unfamiliar, Ryan has 160,000 followers on TikTok. So he's had some viral videos over there and talks about all of these topics. And that's how we first got connected. And I guess that is interesting as far as, because again, that's probably another category that some of us deal with now, which is online, which is different than the person on the street, the person at the post office, someone cutting you off. And that to a certain extent feels like the easiest to disengage with, because you can just not respond or block the person or delete their comment. And even the callers we get on this show sometimes, like Jane's got very specific producer rules of callers who call in, and if they're going to be rude, they're going to get hung up on. And so do you think there is value, and kind of expanding on what you just said, like the value of engaging online with people who seem angry?
Yeah, I think there can be. And I think that there are times when, those angry comments, again, come from a good place. And I think one of the things, you know, so far in this conversation, we've really sort of framed this around like someone who's angry with us. But the truth is we encounter anger all the time. Mm. It isn't necessarily directed at us. It's directed at someone else. And so it's, you know, that angry spouse we may see or those angry comments online, it might be that they're just an angry person and that anger is directed outwardly, but that we end up enduring it in ways that make us uncomfortable. I think that online, we encounter anger all the time. It's the most sort of ubiquitous emotion online in most ways. It drives political conversations. Mm-hmm. It actually even drives sort of news and politics and so on.
It drives people's Bud Light consumption.
Yes. Yeah. And actually, there was recently just a study that said that some of those angry people aren't necessarily as angry as people might think, that sometimes we misperceive some online behaviors, anger, when it's really not intended to be that.
Oh, that's interesting. All right. Well, the anger professor, a.k.a. Ryan Martin, will still be here when we come back. If you have questions for him or different advice that you would like, 844-967-2789, how to deal with an angry person in your life, 844-96-PARTY. We will take your calls and your texts when we come back, and then we will be with the professor to wrap up the show. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair, and we are talking to Ryan Martin, a.k.a. the Anger Professor, about his new book, How to Deal with Angry People, which feels relevant. And I guess as far as in your anger research, and we might have talked about this a little bit the last time you were on, but why are we actually getting angrier, or is there just more documentation of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the easiest answer is there's no way to know for sure, but I believe that we are getting angrier. And I think that there's a third possibility too, and this actually might be the most accurate, which is it's not so much that we're getting angrier, it's that we are worse at controlling it. And that what we might be seeing is a more acceptance of outward, aggressive, and hostile displays of anger. And I sort of put acceptance in quotes there. I don't think we're actually accepting of it, but I think it's been normalized in some ways, where people used to get mad and they'd sort of fume internally. Now they're more likely to try and act on it.
And I'm just thinking and you're so right, Ryan, that people getting upset when their order is wrong at a fast food restaurant and like losing it. Right. And we are seeing more of that kind of thing as opposed to, hey, it was a mistake. Here's some fries. Get over it. You know, I think that there's so many other instances where what would have been a minor annoyance before is now this huge explosion of rage that is not called for.
Yeah, and I think that very well might be true. What used to be maybe like a relatively minor inconvenience is now feels bigger to people. I think people are running on greater stress and things like economic uncertainty. All those things sort of drive people's stress levels that exacerbate how they respond to things. I do think there's probably some research out there, probably some evidence that we were a little worse at impulse control than we once were, that might come with use of technology and how things have changed there. But I think actually to Kristen's earlier point that there's, you know, we do have maybe documentation through videos and things like that of things that maybe were happening once before that just weren't captured the same way and therefore not as evident.
Because, and you know, we touched on this last week with the U.S. Surgeon General's declaration that we're in a loneliness epidemic. Have you looked much into like the overlap of loneliness and anger?
Yeah, it's your timing is great here because my university is actually the college that I'm an associate dean for is we spent the year as our common theme was loneliness.
Oh, wow.
And so we've been studying this in various ways and doing talks about it all semester. Loneliness exacerbates all sorts of negative emotions, including anger. And part of what makes anger so interesting here is that anger is really a social emotion in a lot of ways. We're most likely to experience it in these social interactions. And consequently, the fact that the relationship between loneliness and anger then is, it's really sort of interesting that we have, when we're truly alone, meaning not interacting with people, we're less likely to experience it. But the flip side is we also don't have as much practice interacting with people. And so when we are kind of wronged, quote unquote, or when we feel wronged in a social interaction, we're maybe more likely to handle it poorly because we just don't have the same kind of experience dealing with it day in and day out.
So I guess since we don't have, well, probably have, now I feel like we have to have you back to talk about loneliness now that I know you guys have been studying it for a while, because that was fascinating to me, especially in the context of like a college campus, which is some of the most social time in a lot of our lives, as far as roommates and dorm mates and being in class and constantly being surrounded by people, and yet young people still feeling really lonely. So since we can't dive into that today, I will come back to the book and say, if there is one, knowing that there's different categories of people that you deal with who are angry, but as far as like one big takeaway for listeners right now in this conversation, as far as universal strategy of dealing with angry people, what would that be?
Yeah, I think one of the things I would say, and it's kind of a biggie, I admit, but one of the things I talked about a lot in the first book and would come back to in this one is to take a moment to sort of diagram the angry incident from their perspective, meaning think about why they are angry, think about the mood state they were in at the time, think about how they're interpreting things, and so on. And the reason I say that is there's really two reasons. One is part of it's about empathy, and that I do think that even if that other person is in the wrong, trying to understand the situation from their perspective can offer a little bit of insight into what they're going through and potential to kind of feel on their behalf a little bit. The other reason I say that is it provides you some evidence on how to, or some information on how to intervene. Because if you really understand the experience from their perspective, it's way easier for you to think about, okay, so how can I de-escalate it, right? If I know what's driven this is because, you know, how they're interpreting things, maybe there are some ways I can correct that information. If I know that what's making this worse is that they're really, really struggling, they're really, really hungry, or they're really, really stressed right now, maybe there are some ways that tells me how to intervene. And so it gives me really valuable information on how to deal with what's going on.
Or they're really, really pregnant? No.
Although I probably wouldn't intervene that way.
All right. Well, can you get the book anywhere you can get books tomorrow?
You sure can. So, yep, it's available for pre-order right now, and you can get it wherever you buy your books.
So it's called How to Deal with Angry People, 10 Strategies for Facing Anger at Home, at Work, and in the Street. He is Ryan Martin. You can follow him at Anger Professor at Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, right? It's all Anger Professor everywhere?
All those places, yep.
And which is so funny because you are so not an angry person. You are so calm.
You are very calm.
One of my coworkers once told me, he said, we think you study this because you're trying to figure out what other people feel. So not true. I just don't share it the way a lot of people do. Yeah.
All right. Well, Professor Ryan Martin, thank you so much for taking time with us. We'll have to have you back to talk about loneliness because that is super interesting.
I would love it. Always love coming on the show. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that will do it for us on this Monday. We will be back tomorrow, as always, at 11 a.m. But as always, thank you for calling. Thank you for texting. Thank you for listening. This has been As Goes Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.